morning is the United States versus Jones. Mr. Royce.
Good morning, Your Honors. Government prosecutors, may it please the Honorable Court. My name is Tom Royce, and I'm here this morning representing William Jones. William Jones is presently in the Federal Correctional Institute at Duluth, Minnesota, serving a 70-month sentence and having forfeited substantial amounts of property as a result of a plea agreement that was entered by he, through his attorney, Mr. Alex Salerno, at a proceeding before Judge Ford. We're here this morning and pursuant to the briefs and the arguments presented, to ask this court to vacate that order pursuant to Rule 32 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, Rule 32E. Without being tried or casual in any way, be construed to limit the significance of 32E, I believe that in the committee comments and the reviewing the legislative history of 32E, it was a statutory provision enacted and provided by Congress to enable a defendant who, having pled guilty and carried a sentence, give him the opportunity to ask the court to review his sentence, his plea, and vacate such, not his sentence, but to vacate his plea for the purpose of certain facts and circumstances that resulted either prior to the plea or immediately after the plea.
Could we talk about the facts just for a minute, Mr. Royce, because it seems that the record really does contradict much of what Mr. Jones argues.
Yes, ma'am. The fact of the plea and the contest between he and Mr. Salerno as to the circumstances of how he got to the point where I got involved in the case?
Well, that and he seems to, you know, change his mind about his contacts with Mr. Salerno, how many,
yes, ma'am,
how deep they went.
As you point out, there are factual conflicts in this case and the record testimony that reflected that. I believe Mr. Jones' position was is that there was from time to time a discussion between he and Mr. Salerno about the nature of the case and the plea. His conflict, I think, on the two points that I would consider significant were whether or not the continued representation of him in relation to the plea that he says he had a short time to consider conflicts with Mr. Salerno, in that Mr. Salerno said that, or testified under oath, that he had given Mr. Jones a substantial opportunity of several weeks to consider the alternatives.
Well, the other thing is, Jones on cross-examination, though, is not just what Salerno says. It's Jones on cross-examination who admits that, you know, he knew that the plea agreement had been tendered to Salerno 7 or 8 days before, that he had talked to Salerno, he had actually suggested changes in the plea agreement. I mean, those are things out of your client's mouth that I think are problematic, that he had 7 to 12 days to consider pleading, and that he had the final version of the plea agreement the day before he actually pled. I mean, those are words out of your client's mouth.
Well, I think those are the words that we've dealt with, that he had the plea agreement the day before, and I think that's what we focused on as far as that, because I don't think there was any disagreement as to this, Your Honors, that Mr. Salerno delayed the proceedings or stopped delay in the sentencing proceeding because of the nature of Jones' plea, which was kind of conditioned upon or delayed because of the testimony that was necessary. And I think that common flow at the district level is pretty consistent with our understanding of how practices go. The actual delivery or the knowledge of the plea negotiations for those, and my reading of some of the testimony was it was perhaps as long, and I don't think we disagree, John, it was perhaps as long as 15 days. But during those times, I think there was times that the record reflected both from my client's mouth as well as Mr. Salerno that there was an interplay about communications, about other clients, about kind of that point of breakdown. And then that's culminated, Your Honor, in Mr. Salerno's withdrawal, where he says that in June and July that this breakdown occurred for lack of fees, for lack of communication. I think his motion to withdraw summarized that and was somewhat inconsistent with his testimony, and this goes back to what Your Honor said, Judge Romer, about what he said about when the breakdown occurred. The point I wish to make, and I don't mean to disagree or move away from Your Honor's question or in any way minimize it, but I do believe there was a conflict, but I think that's one of those conflicts, with all due respect, that should be resolved in favor of the defendant in this case. And the reason why is that I think that how 42 comes into play. It is never a pleasure for an attorney to stand before any court, district court, court of appeals, administrative body of any sort. And point, you did this wrong to another attorney, or I would do this. That's not the goal of my approach in this case. I think 32 gives the opportunity of a defendant to, for lack of a better term, reflect on if there is a substantial reason, and what I'd like to then get to is the substantial reason. I believe throughout this entire proceeding, in the flash of the case, and the motion to quash arrest and suppress evidence, and the motion to suppress additional evidence was the core of the defendant's legal defense in this case. Clearly, throughout the entire proceeding, the search, the seizure, the fact that there were co-defendants, the fact that the police and the FBI acted in a particular fashion, brought this matter to the district court's attention in the form of what I would consider an outstandingly drafted motion, an outstanding member supporting memorandum, and then for that to terminate in a rather short period of time and say you have to plead because Jerron's going to testify against you. Here's that thing that has been in this case in a very difficult position to deal with. Mr. Jamal, his involvement in this case was the critical element as far as Mr. Jones's plea, and I believe that the record may reflect Mr. Jones's ability to answer questions, but clearly on the stand in front of Judge Corey, he was very tentative, he was very confused, he was very anxious about the whole circumstance sitting in that Boston District Court downstairs, and I think his answers were rather flattering. The fact was that was consistent with Mr. Jones' response and relationship with Mr. Salerno. It is clear that at the end of the case, Salerno withdrew, stated the reasons for his withdrawal, that he didn't believe that there were people that he was working for, the family's interest and Mr. Jones' interest, and that then terminated. Now, I think that's an objective sign, and I would ask Your Honor to consider that as an objective sign of the breakdown of the attorney-client relationship, which then caused Mr. Jones to have the other opportunities for another counsel or counsel to come in to review the facts of the case and determine whether or not the plea was properly accepted. And ground was what affidavits that were presented at the trial court for the purpose of vacating the plea. If 32 really means anything, I would suggest, Your Honors, is those 7 points that I pointed out in my brief, and I believe we left those 7 points. And I believe that seems to be the consensus that I've reached in my research from around the country as to what one must show. And I think in this case, he promptly acted. He took immediate steps to bring the matter to the court's attention. It was all done prior to sentencing. It was done consistent with what the rules required. There was no substantial prejudice to the government on either source. Certainly, the ability to prepare to proceed to a motion to quash arrest and suppress evidence would not in any way depreciate the government's position. They have time, money, and efforts, and witnesses available. On the other hand, it certainly would be one of those situations which would protect the defendant's what's pretty much left of a limited right that he has to litigate that Fourth Amendment right of the search of his home. And then finally, I hate to use the phrase, the proof is kind of in the pudding. He got 10 to 7 months. He lost his house, he lost his car, he got no benefits whatsoever from any of his negotiations. Indeed, his sentence was graduated, greatly increased by the amount of time that he didn't get. So for those, for those reasons, at this time I would ask Your Honors to take this matter under review and reverse the finding of the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Orr.
Mr. Fogle?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Mark Fogle. I was one of government counsel in the district court. May it please this court, counsel. Let me take the last point first. The sentence in this case that Mr. Jones received did not result from the plea agreement. It resulted from his obstruction of justice. He received a two-level enhancement because the district court increased his sentence because the district court found that he had committed perjury in the submission of his false affidavit in an attempt to withdraw his guilty plea. So he received a two-level increase for that. He lost one of his three acceptance of responsibility points. So what ended up happening was he went from a potential sentence of 46 months to 57, I believe, to 70 months. And I believe the court imposed a sentence in the mid-range. So much for the sentence. There's two issues in this case, Your Honors. One, did the district court abuse its discretion in the denial of Jones' motion to withdraw his guilty plea? And did Jones receive effective assistance of competent counsel during the entrance of that guilty plea? And if I don't say anything else to you at this point, The facts and the record conclusively establish that the court did not abuse its discretion at any point in these proceedings. The court, in fact, bent over backwards to give Mr. Jones his day in court. The court did not summarily deny his motion to withdraw his guilty plea. The court held a hearing. The court held a hearing at which both Mr. Jones and his counsel, his former counsel, Mr. Salerno, testified. After that hearing, the court determined that where there were conflicts in the testimony, and I note what Judge Williams said, that pretty much Mr. Jones said that he was not surprised by the guilty plea, the plea agreement, that he had had 7 to 12 days to consider the matter, that he had had input in the preparation of the guilty plea, that he had adequate time to consult with his attorney. Where there was a conflict was this whole thing about whether or not Mr. Jones and what he told the district court during his Rule 11 hearing. You recall that Mr. Jones was under oath at that point as well and told the court in an extensive colloquy that he was pleading guilty voluntarily, that this was his choice, that Mr. Salerno was properly representing him after a full discussion of the facts in the case. And, you know, then to say at his plea withdrawal hearing that, well, I was told by Mr. Salerno to say all those things when I was before you before, and of course Mr. Salerno testified quite to the contrary, that he never did and would not tell a defendant what that defendant should tell the district court under oath during the guilty plea proceedings. And Judge Cora credited Mr. Salerno's testimony, and that really, it seems to me, should be kind of the end of the matter, as I understand this court's jurisprudence with respect to credibility determinations. If those credibility determinations are to be upheld, that means that what Mr. Jones originally told the court in his plea colloquy, that is his sworn answers to the court that this is a voluntary plea, that yes, I'm satisfied with my attorney has represented me properly, all of that, under this court's precedent, is accorded a presumption of verity. I think that's the terminology used. And it dooms Mr. Jones's case. I mean, that should be the end of the matter here. And Judge Cora said, you know, with respect to whether or not this would prejudice the government or anything, that's beside the point. Judge Cora said very correctly, this is not even a close case. It's not even a close case.
So what about Mr. Royce's point that Mr. Salerno did ultimately withdraw? Shouldn't that be a factor that was given more weight?
Mr. Salerno, Your Honor, withdrew considerably after the entry of the guilty plea in this case, and the record establishes, and I believe there was a motion that was filed when he withdrew, indicating to the court that there had been a breakdown in communications between him and his client. And the issue was not withdrawal of the guilty plea, it was the fact that we're trying to prepare for sentencing, which is coming up in about half a month now, and my client is not communicating with me. And additionally, I believe he stated in the motion that there are issues as to whether or not I'm going to be paid or have been paid or whatever. But at that point, you know, it kind of takes two to tango here, and if you have a client that is no longer communicating with you, and I believe there was some testimony about the breakdown in communication during the guilty plea hearing. And again, my recollection is that Judge Cora credited Mr. Salerno in terms of what had happened and what the events were, and basically that. And another thing I think is very important here: Judge Cora was not just a spectator; he was present and observed Mr. Jones enter his guilty plea. He went through an extensive colloquy with Mr. Jones during that guilty plea. He told Mr. Jones, if you have any questions or problems or issues, please bring them to my attention now. None were raised. I mean, he had a chance to observe and to talk to Mr. Jones. And
he also had the chance to see the plea agreements with the margin notes that had been made during discussions.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, there was the plea agreement you're referring to. With Mr. Salerno, we were engaged in the negotiation of the terms of the plea agreement, and Mr. Salerno had made notations in the margins, particularly with respect to issues that his client, Mr. Jones, took umbrage at or had a question about. And in a number of instances, those questions and issues were in court, well, they were not only addressed, they became parts and terms of the plea agreement. And one other thing, I just want to, before I leave this, because my time is just about up, the plea agreement in this case that Mr. Salerno negotiated gave Mr. Jones some considerable benefits. I mean, he was able to avoid two counts that carried mandatory minimum sentences. This is a defendant who was not cooperating, who did not qualify for the safety valve. Additionally, he would have received 3 points off for acceptance of responsibility. The government agrees it would not seek an upward departure. The government also agreed that we would not use certain of the intercepted conversations in this case of other parties discussing Mr. Jones and somehow attributing to him that he was engaged in cocaine distribution. We agreed not to, out of fairness, not to offer those conversations at sentencing. So, to say that this was just some sort of a one-sided thing where Mr. Salerno deserted and abandoned Mr. Jones is simply not correct, and we ask the court to affirm the district court's rulings and to affirm the district court in all respects. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vogel. Mr. Royce, how much time?
Got about a minute.
Yes, sir. Thank you. In response to my colleague at the bar, I respectfully submit to this court that Rule 32E is an important tool that a defendant has. The fact is that there were negotiations, but the fact further is that the record fully reflects the filing of a motion to withdraw by Mr. Salerno, the breakdown of communication almost simultaneous with the plea agreement. The plea agreement's discussion with Mr. Jones and its voluntary admissions at the pre-trial, at the pre-sentence, at the preliminary hearing or the trial, the Rule 11 hearing, it's consistent. And he saw what I answered was what Mr. Salerno said. Now, whether or not that's true or not, this court has heard that so many times, it's redundant. But I go back to what 32 is, and it's the opportunity of a defendant to ask the court to vacate a plea and to litigate a substantial constitutional right. And in this case, notwithstanding the arguments of the government, what concessions they made, it is clear from the record that Mr. Jones got the enhancement by attempting to withdraw his plea because the court then found that his attempts were obstructing justice. I think that in the interest of fairness, this court should reverse the district court and vacate the plea and set it down for further proceedings. Thank you again. It's always an honor and a privilege and a pleasure to appear before this court.
Thank you, Mr. Royce, for your service in this case.